Hi everyone and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone and welcome to Pixels, the show where we talk about video game news from the past couple of weeks and we try to go behind the news, beyond the news, try to explain, analyze and make you understand why it's important and why it might not be. We sometimes manage to do it, especially when my good friend Garrett Wanzerl is here with us, and that's the case today. So woohoo, rejoice. How's it going, Garrett?
I don't know how true all of that is. I think last time we ended up talking about anime dubs.
Well, okay, so it's true in the sense that I put it on the box of the podcast with the mention, you know, it as heard on the podcast itself, this podcast is amazing. That's how I do it. My name is Patrick Beja, by the way. Yeah, the podcast box. It's you can get it somewhere. Don't know where, but it's awesome. You know what? We have a bunch of stuff to talk about today. GDC happened, and PlayStation VR has a price and a release month. There's a bunch of things from the GDC itself that I thought were interesting as well. A bunch of news on the Blizzard corner as well we're going to talk about. You're probably aware of most of them, but still, there's a couple of interesting ones. And then Garrett tells us why he loves The Division.
Because it's good, Patrick. Spoiler alert. Because yeah, it's good.
So, and I tell you what I think of it too. I'll leave it at that. We'll discuss at that point.
Ooh, I see some headbutting coming.
might be in the spirit of the anime dub and sub discussion we've had.
So friendly headbutting.
Yeah, exactly. It did get a few responses from people. You know, it got people reacting, that anime thing. Some people completely in your camp. Some people were understanding where I was coming from. So,
and I'm sure you got some people who are in the middle of the road who said they like both. Because that's how this works, Patrick. People exactly. Have different opinions.
That is how the internet works. Yes. All right, GDC. Sony went there and they brought their PlayStation VR VR headset, and they were like, this, it'll be available in October, it's gonna cost $400, buy it. And then people are like, what? And Sony were like, yeah. And then there were a few more details that came up, and it turns out it's not just $400, because you need the PlayStation camera for sure. That's $600. And you might want to get PlayStation Moves as well. You might have some from your PlayStation 3 era, so you might have them already. So yeah, but the basic package is $400, available in October. That is definitely the cheapest of the quote unquote real VR headsets. I've been saying for months that I think Sony has a giant open avenue in front of it to conquer that first round of the VR wars. And with the sub $400 price, you know, on paper, it is for, you could buy it for that price. I think that was a decisive blow to their competitors. What do you think?
I agree. That's it's still such a high price point. Like, to me, in my brain, it just does not compute that I can buy the console for cheaper than this accessory. also, not to mention, you also need the camera.
Yeah. But, so that's, let's say, $450. If you want the camera as well, if you don't already have it.
$450. That's $100 more than a PS4.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty insane. Well, you know what? If you want to buy a PC VR, then you go with the Oculus or the HTC Vive, and it costs more than the PSVR, but it's less than the device you're running it on.
I was about to say, that at least computes in my head, because I'm like, well, my rig costs a lot more than this, so...
Right. yeah, so I mean, a lot of people are saying the price, you know, you get the quality you pay for, and certainly the PSVR is less good. It's not as good as the PCVR headsets. It's more comfortable. Every report we've had, and when I've tried it, I've had the same impression. It is definitely more comfortable to have on your head, which, you know, you might think, what does that matter? But when you're supposed to have it for half an hour or longer on your head, I think it's going to count.
I don't want to be like Kylo Ren, where it looks like this thing is so damn heavy that it's inspiring rage.
Yeah, that could be the Kylo Ren helmet experience for sure. By the way, PlayStation is getting, Sony is getting the exclusive to the VR experience for Battlefront. So you
that
might...
That actually excites the hell out of me because that game is so pretty. Like, I just I want to be immersed in that world. So bring it on.
I think there are going to be a bunch of them, but okay, just to finish on the hardware, I think it's absolutely fair to say that the PlayStation VR is going to be less technically impressive than the other headsets are going to be. The Oculus VR, which is releasing in a week now, it has better resolution, you know, it's better quality for the screen, all of that. That's for sure. The thing that is key, though, at least that was my feeling, and that's been echoed by everyone who I've heard who had tried that PlayStation VR, is that the PlayStation VR is good enough that it gives you the VR wow effect. And it's certainly you're going to notice the pixels and the graphics are not going to be as good as your, you know, $1,500 PC. But it's still good enough that it has no lag, good FPS, and the experience as a whole is a VR experience. It's not like, you know, when you get a Google Cardboard with your phone in it and you're like, oh, this is, you know, kind of like VR, I guess, but it doesn't really work as well, right? On the PlayStation VR, the effect that you're supposed to get on the when you try VR is there. At least that was my experience. So I think that's the key. They are at the right price point that allows them to make it cheaper than the others, but still deliver the experience. And I think that is why that is a key, you know, metric that makes them a favorite in that battle. I also think there's another thing that very few people are thinking about, but it's the distribution network that Sony has. You know, the PlayStation VR is going to be everywhere. It's going to be at, you know, at Best Buy, at Walmart. It's going to be every store. Obviously, it's going to be at GameStop and the specialist hobbyist stores, but it's also going to be everywhere else. And that it makes it, by default, sort of the most widely available and most successful one as well. Things right, might change in the second year.
We're not assuming that we're going to walk into a Walmart or Target and see an Oculus chilling on the shelf. Like, that's
yeah,
highly unlikely that that's going to be the way that you purchase an Oculus Rift.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You're very likely going to have to order it off the internet or to go to a very specific store maybe. But that is also, you know, a key aspect of that battle that the headsets are going to wage. So I think that's super, super important too. And then there are the games. Oculus is going to have 30 games available when it launches next week. There are a bunch of different ones. Sony said there are going to be 5 games available at launch, but 50 by the end of the year. So it's going to trickle down relatively quickly. And then, you know, there were a few teachings from the GDC talks. And I think the one that was the most surprising was the fact that apparently the games that are the most comfortable to play are third-person games, third-person VR games, not first-person. That was weird.
So strange to me.
It's, you know, I think the thing is, if you place yourself in first person, it comes with so many constraints. Like, first of all, in order to look anywhere, you have to move your head. You don't have a lot of peripheral vision, but awareness of what's around you. Whereas,
well, you have to move your head if the game is built on the gyroscopic aspect of the headset rather than just using a controller like usual.
Aha, but the problem is, if you do that and you move your vision without moving your head, then you get super seasick and you puke, right? That is where things don't apparently work as well. And also, then what do you do with your head when you're moving? what's the point of moving your head if you're already moving your vision with the controller?
I'm personally mildly terrified of having any of these games where I actually have to look around. I kind of just want to put it on, sit on the couch, and play with the controller like usual.
Well, I guess the experience can be that as well, but I think for the games that you're going to be playing the longest are the games that provide that kind of experience. Yes, that you're going to be sitting down and moving your head to look here or there from time to time, but certainly you're not going to be, if you have to move your head all the time, imagine the amount of effort that you're asking a gamer to do. No one's also going to move their head.
Also, God forbid you have a really small room. Like, all of a sudden you have to play all your games in a swivel chair so you can go 360. Like, I don't see that happening. I have no interest in that world, Patrick. I don't want to live in it.
Well, apparently, the best experience, well, not the best, but the things that work really well are third person. So you're not necessarily going to have to move your, I'm not even sure how those work as well. But you're probably going to have to move your head and swivel your chair less because the third person perspective allows you to have more of a view of what's happening. And then maybe you're looking around or moving around with your controller. I don't know how it's going to work.
I mean, that's how I assume. And you're also kind of bringing up another thing that I'm really interested in, you know, maybe not right now, but like next year, like how are any outlets going to, you know, how are we going to show the VR experience? Like if I go over to like Game Trailers and I want to watch a review of a VR game, how is that being conveyed to me that this is any good, or how are they visually showing me this game?
I think the thing is, sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry, go right ahead.
So the thing is, I think once you've tried it yourself, you can sort of approximate what another experience is going to be like. Right. I think the big hurdle is once you've tried it. And again, that sort of brings up the dominance of Sony in the distribution, in the retail market. They're going to be able to put demo stations in many different stores. So you're going to have that experience and it's going to be sort of get you into that world. But once you've had that, I think it's fair to assume that, you know, if someone explains to you how it works, and hell, you can just put on a helmet if you have one. You put it on, and there's a video in VR that explains to you what is happening and sort of a test version of the game. No?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. I think it's going to be... I mean, yeah, anyway, we still don't even know whether or not the VR thing is going to work out, period. Maybe it's going to turn out that after a couple of hours, you get so tired and it's so gimmicky that you don't want to play with it anymore. In which case, I think buying the 400 euros or dollars headset is probably a better deal. By the way, there's a bundle with a PlayStation camera and two Move controllers that is going to be $500. And that's going to be available in a few days as well for pre-order. I hope it's coming to Europe as well, that bundle. I'm not sure it is, but... while we're on the topic of Sony, they have had a discussion. There's been a discussion about a potential version 4.5 of the PlayStation, basically a PlayStation 4K that would be just the regular PlayStation, but able to display 4K, maybe have a little bit more of beefy specs for VR management, but definitely able to display 4K on the 4K TVs, possibly even your games. And some people have been saying, well, this is interesting when you compare that to what Microsoft has been saying that we talked about last time, about the possibility of having different versions of the machine, of the Xbox One, being upgraded over time. Every few years, they would still play the same games, but you would get a new version that would play them a little bit better and a little bit better, and then over maybe two or three or four generations, then you would drop the generation from 10 years ago and the games wouldn't play on that one. And so people are assuming a PlayStation 4K would kind of be the same thing. I don't think it would be. I think it would just be a PlayStation 4 that plays things in 4K and that's it. And you still have all the same games everywhere. But what do you think?
again, mildly terrified. I don't really want to have to worry about my consoles like I do my smartphone.
Yeah, that's exactly the analogy, right?
Trade-in programs suck. you never get enough for it, and I don't know. I'm a PC gamer. I have a nice PC that outperforms every console in my home, but I also have my consoles because I like couch gaming. So I don't know. You're talking to the wrong demographics. Like, well, I already have my really expensive thing that I'm always tinkering with and buying new things for. So please don't do this because I just want my console to be good for 8 years.
I think, you know, it's a lot of people are saying this, and I think it's I think they're overthinking what this might be. It's a similar model to the phones, but I don't think they would ever release one console per year. It would be, you know, one console every 4 years, and you would keep one for a couple of generations, and then you would change every 8 years your console, and it would still play all your games, and you wouldn't have to worry about rebuying an HD version of the games you already have. Or, you know, I think wasn't
Microsoft though talking about a possible 2 year cycle?
Maybe 2 years. All right, let's say it's 2 years and you skip a couple of generations. That's, you change your console every 6 years. Isn't that acceptable?
Well, I mean, this is all hypothetical. It depends.
Yes, of course.
Providing I'm not getting locked out of any games on my console that I spent a ton of money on, then yeah, that's fine. But if I am getting locked out of any content, then I'm sitting here getting real pissed.
Yeah, that's understandable. I don't think they would lock out people unless it would be like 3 or 4 generations old. I think that would be suicide if they did it. It would work like a PC. You get the same game, but with lesser graphics maybe than you would if you had the latest version of the console. That still pisses some people off, but
I'm also curious how that would work on the development end, like how convenient that would be.
Well, it works the same way it does on PC. I guess it's a little bit more of a headache for the developers, but they all develop their games for PCs anyway, so...
Well, right, but on the PC, they develop a menu system where you can tweak it yourself. We've never really seen anything like that on consoles, short of, you know, turning off cussing and blood.
Yeah. No, I think it would be automatic. It sets the graphics that are adapted to your device. It doesn't give you a choice.
Right. But that's what I'm saying is I'm curious how easy and/or difficult that would be to work with.
Yeah.
I would assume that's one of the pluses of working on a title for a console. It's like, well, I know exactly the hardware we're working with as opposed to the PC side of things. So it's like, oh man, we have to we have to take into account a lot of potentials.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it would be, they wouldn't have just one console to worry about. They would have like three, which is, again, akin to the world of smartphones. And if you look at iOS and that ecosystem, it's okay. It's not, you know, they might have maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 different types of devices to worry about, maybe a little bit more. But it's not like you have 100,000 like you do in the PC ecosystem, so it wouldn't be that much more difficult, I don't think. Yeah. Anyway, this is all speculation, but it was interesting that on the heels of Microsoft announcing a potential upgrade path for their console, Sony is getting rumors about the potential PlayStation 4K, so I thought I'd mention it. Also, Microsoft has been saying, hey, we're open to the idea of having cross-network play. Like, if you want to play with your friends on other networks, without naming Sony, they were saying, yeah, no problem. You could do it if the other networks are okay with it. And then Sony was like, yeah, fine. We could, you know, we're okay with other networks. Like, we do it with PCs already. We've been doing it forever. Unlike, you know... Microsoft, who sort of made it seem like for Rocket League, it was sort of a new thing that they were bringing to the console world. But they didn't, they sounded a little bit less enthusiastic about the idea. Obviously, they have the dominant platform for this cycle, so they wouldn't benefit much from that compatibility with Xbox One's network if you would be able to play games against your friends that are on the other network. The only people who would benefit from this are the players. I thought Sony was all about the gamers. How do they put it? This is for the players. Is their tagline? But anyway, the Rocket League is ready to go. They're like, yeah, we can do it. If you sort out your crap, we can get people to play from Xbox One to PC to PlayStation Network. We don't care. So,
and the pendulum of who is showing themselves as the good guy swings back in the other direction.
So would you, I guess it would be only beneficial to all of us gamers if that did happen, right?
Right, which is why it'll never happen.
Such a cynical person. I didn't realize you were that that dark, Garrett. It might.
Well, I mean, it's hilarious, right? I mean, we've got Sony that has already done the cross-platform of PC players, as opposed to Microsoft, you know, the company that makes the OS most PC gamers are using. Like, that's hilarious. And yeah, no, I mean, you said it. You just didn't say it with a little bit of malice behind the tone of your voice.
Yeah.
You straight up said, well, this benefits Microsoft because Sony's currently winning.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it might happen for some games, maybe. I mean, Rocket League is pushing, and it's sort of the thing where Sony can't really say, no, we don't want it to happen. They can only sort of remain vague, and if they're pressed too much, I don't know. I don't know. But it would definitely be good for us.
That would be wonderful. I would love it. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I have both, but I don't buy two copies of a game. So,
of course,
for the most part, I do have two copies of Destiny. Don't judge
you
me, people.
You do.
Yeah. Huh.
Interesting.
I do. I picked it up for Xbox on sale so I could play with my Microsoft buddies.
Wow. And so you're re-leveling different characters?
I definitely fell off on the Xbox. Right. Because more of my friends were playing on PlayStation.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I'm pretty sure that you wouldn't be able to play FPSs, for example, PC versus consoles, because PCs have a very clear advantage.
I would not assume that would be the case.
Yeah. It would just be probably for, you know, games like Rocket League or Street Fighter V or, you know, any game that plays in the same way on all platforms.
I could see it and would love it for The Division, actually. I mean, it's a third-person shooter, but it's really more of an RPG, so...
Yeah, maybe it wouldn't matter as much. But still, I mean, on PC, you're able to aim so much better. Even with a third-person shooter, I think it would give them an advantage, wouldn't it?
I guess. I mean, yeah, I guess in the Dark Zone. But anywhere else,
exactly,
nobody cares.
Exactly. Yeah,
because it's PvE.
True. A couple of more talks that I thought were interesting in that GDC. There was the first one was who was it? Frank Cifaldi, yeah, I guess. He is at Digital Eclipse. He is head of restoration. Basically, he made a talk, gave a talk about emulation and the importance of preserving our media's history. He was giving examples, making parallels with films. He was saying, quote, according to the Film Foundation, over half the films made before 1950s are gone. I don't mean that you can't buy these on DVD. I mean, they're gone. They don't exist anymore. And he said that for films produced before 1920, that number jumps to 80%. And I thought that was a really striking example of, because, you know, rightfully so, on the short term, a lot of developers and publishers are saying you can't use our games, you can't do anything with them because it goes against our copyright. We might be losing parts of the history of our art form, and that is really sad. I think there's the emulators and the preservers are doing a good job at saving everything they can. I think most of the number of games that have absolutely disappeared is very small, but there's certainly a sentiment when it comes to emulation. And yes, some pirates use them for sure, but it's basically the important part of it is preservation. And he was saying something along the lines of, wouldn't it be awesome if we had archivists whose job would be to go out and seek all of those games and put them in a safe place somewhere? And then he was like, yes, there are those people, but we're calling them pirates instead of, you know, the wonderful archivists that they are. And I think in the long run, yes, piracy is an issue, but in this case, it is absolutely more important that we preserve everything we can than, you know, making sure that at some point we have them and they're safe somewhere. And piracy be damned, it's not as big a deal, I don't think. So,
well, as someone who has played so many ROMs, I've lost track. Obviously, I'm in your camp, but yeah, it's a huge ethical gray area, right? Like, I mean, how much of this, even being an issue, do we chalk up to the dawn of the HD remake? And not to mention the Nintendo eShop,
yeah,
which is increasingly rubbing me the wrong way.
Absolutely, but,
I don't know because we're never going to get this perfect world, right? Where all of this stuff is archived, can be found in the same place, can be played on whatever the hell we feel like playing it on. That's just not going to happen. And as much as it may annoy someone like you or me, I mean, that it is these companies, these publishers, you know, prerogative to hold these back or make them available again and make you buy it again. It's on them. They have the rights.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is. But when you look at the danger, the potential issue that this creates, I think it should be a little bit of an alarm that sounds off somewhere. And to be honest, I'm sure some people play arcade games over and over again on their, you know, MAME emulator. But really, is it a super... It's kind of like worrying about TV show piracy. And yes, it is a problem, absolutely. But if you make it available easily and cheaply, people are going to pay for it, right? I think that's what Netflix has shown. And
that's what that's what it all boiled down to. The same thing happened with music and iTunes. I mean,
exactly. I think the point is, I'm not trying to say it's not an issue. It definitely is. And certainly for the games that just came out, maybe in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years, it's definitely a problem because there are some people that will just pirate. But I don't think that archiving, you know, all the ROMs you can from the arcade era and the super old Nintendo games, some games that no one cares about, this is not for the games that you're going to be putting out again and again. You know, it's not for the Zeldas, it's not for the Marios. Those, we know that they're always going to be available. There's no question that those games are not only going to be available somewhere because there were so many of them sold, but also they're going to be coming back over and over again, you know, in some form or another. I think it's more for the history, as we were saying, of the medium that we need to have to preserve as much as we can of everything, not the successful ones, everything else as well. So
I agree.
Yeah, there was another talk that I wanted to mention. It was Henry K. Lode, who's a game developer, and who mentioned something about the different types of games that she wants to make, and she doesn't really get the opportunity to make because they're too weird and people are freaked out about them. And it's not weird in the that weird kind of sense. It made me think, like, when I read those ideas, it's not necessarily the games that I absolutely want to make, to play, but it's the game that I would like to have the opportunity to see and experience. So let me give you a few examples. She says, quote, "Last year at the Nordic Game Jam, I wanted to make a game about the role of an untrained helper during childbirth." She said, "Unfortunately, the people I was jamming with were too scared of what the graphics would look like. So instead, we ended up making a racing game where you would have to drive a pregnant lady to a hospital before she gives birth." All right. Yes, I understand this is weird. And your little nervous laughter just now definitely supports that idea that it is weird.
Hey, man, listen, I usually try to be pretty forward thinking and progressive in my life. But I've seen those pregnancy tapes they made me watch in high school. That sounds terrifying.
But I mean, why don't we have those kinds of things available if you want to? It's the kind of thing you never see, right? Unless, you know, you want to be in the room when your wife gives birth, or if you're the wife, you, I don't know, look at a video to see what's going to happen to you, and it's terrifying.
If it's my own wife, that's a different scenario for me. Of course, well, just
here it's not someone, you know, someone else that you're looking at. It's a computer thing. I mean, it's okay. Keep going.
But my kind of my gut reaction to this was, are we really in a day and age where there's a whole lot stopping you from making the game you want to make?
I think you need at least a couple of people, two or three. And the point of her talk was that you don't need a lot of people, but apparently people don't want to do that. And all right, maybe that one is a little bit too, and she wasn't, you know, she didn't seem to be super vindictive about it. She was just saying it's too bad that we can't do things like that. That one, all right, let's set it aside for a second. Another idea. She says, I want to make a game about xenophobia and racial bias where you are a courier who has to deliver packages, but every day your avatar is randomized, and if you appear like a person of color or a Muslim, people receiving the package might react in different ways depending on their bias. That sounds like an interesting, you know, it's not necessarily a game, but it's kind of an interesting experience, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. All right. Again, I feel like you could find a small team of people that would be interested in making this game. It's just going to be significantly more difficult than finding someone who wants to make a dragon game.
Yeah, true. And I mean, we've had some game experiences that were pretty out there in the past few years with indie games, but maybe it's just that those games seem interesting to me, and I would like to see them be birthed onto the world.
Oh, some of the independent games that have been coming out have been just, I think, incredibly interesting. I mean, I see that like definitely swinging more into like this realm of almost like performance art than traditional game making. But I mean, it is game. It's something you can play. It's an interactive experience. And so that's what I'm thinking of when I'm reading this. I'm like, no, these games, they can get made. Some similar games have been made, but you just have to jump through more hoops. And I feel like that's the same with just about any medium. If you want to do something that's significantly against what is popular, you're going to have to, you know, walk a lot further to get it completed.
True. Yeah, I guess you're right. You've convinced me, which happens sometimes. See,
yeah. Which I'm not trying to discredit her talk. She brings up some really super interesting points, and some of these ideas for games sound fantastic. Please make them.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, we could give a few examples of those, but let me read you the next two, and then we'll move on. She was talking about a game which is a VR experience where your avatar is a private investigator in a wheelchair. You have to follow people around, take pictures, eavesdrop on conversations, but sometimes your targets walk down the stairs and you might miss part of the conversation while you waited in the elevator, etc., etc. Another one was, I want to make a game about taboo topics like domestic violence against men, but I realize that I'm not a man and I don't have any experience with domestic violence, so I would love to brainstorm the concept with people who do in a community where they feel safe enough to share their personal experiences. So I think there are some really interesting things there, and I think you're right. We've seen games, I mean, the two that come to me right now would be things like Papers, Please, or This War of Mine, or...
Yeah, Papers, Please. That's all I've, like, in my brain has just been like, Papers, Please. That game got made. That game is nuts. Like, that pushes the envelope.
Yeah, for sure. So if nothing else, you know, she is, the ideas that she was talking about were really interesting. So, that was an interesting talk also. And, those are the two that I wanted to highlight in the show.
I'm also, I thought the game that features, women who don't want to remove their body hair was super interesting.
Yeah. You know, it's that kind of, anyway. Yeah, I think at some point it borders on societal study almost, but yeah, there are games that are like this as well in the space right now. So Blizzard, there's been a bunch of news about Blizzard games, and I thought I'd make them into a bundle and deliver them to you here. Overwatch is a show we really a game we really love. You and I,
and we do a show about,
right? Overwatchers, if you haven't listened, go and do it now. So it's launching May 24th. You get an open beta for everyone in early May on the 5th. And if you pre-order or pre-purchase the game, you get early access to the open beta on the 3rd and 4th. And the open beta is going to be available on all three platforms, meaning PC, PS4, and Xbox One. That is an excellent opportunity for everyone to try out the game before they are going to buy it and, you know, make sure they like it. I don't see why anyone would not want to buy the game. I've certainly tried to convince everyone that the game is awesome. But yeah, it's good news. Cool stuff.
I'm so stoked for Overwatch. It's just launch already. I just want everyone in this game.
Are you still playing, you know, as much as you did when the beta came back?
No, but that's because mostly The Division. Mostly The Division is to blame for that. That and Heroes of the Storm has had a lot of stuff happening in it lately.
Oh, actually, I didn't put the Heroes of the Storm news in the thing, so maybe we'll get to it very quickly.
I mean, it for the big thing is bans are coming. Huzzah. Everyone rejoice.
Yeah, I saw that. There is also a bunch of stuff happening in the world of Overwatch, the expanded universe, I guess, with the first animated short was published yesterday at the time of recording of this show. There are more coming. We don't know how many exactly. I hope tons and tons. There are digital comics, lots of different things, comics, period. Tracer is going to show up in Heroes of the Storm as well. It's Overwatch Fiesta. What did you think of the animated short featuring Winston?
I loved it to pieces. I want more. I want a feature-length film. I would sit and watch this. It's so good. I mean, it's just oozing Pixar. It's so clearly inspired by Pixar. It's ridiculous, but that's a compliment.
I saw, again, comments on Reddit. So amazing. There was one post about the animated short, and the first comment was, wow, Blizzard does Pixar quality, and the reply to this was no, Pixar does Blizzard quality, and that made me smile.
Okay, that's taking a little far, people.
But it's really good. You know, I didn't like the short as much as I would have loved to like it. I thought on the story front, it was a tiny bit weak. It was sort of expected. I still enjoyed seeing a little bit of the story of Winston and seeing where he comes from and what made him and all of this. But quality wise, I was floored. It was so good, so high quality. And yes, it's definitely the kind of thing that I can't wait to see more of. And building that world that we've been, if you've listened to Overwatchers even once, you've heard us marvel at the amount of world building that this game does with just multiplayer games. There's no story mode, and already they're doing incredible amounts. And with this short, for people who haven't played the game, who aren't in the beta yet, there are so many points of reference in the short where it brings you back to places and elements of the game, and you're like, oh, this is what that is. This explains why.
Winston is sitting in Watchpoint Gibraltar with his extra suit in the corner and his tire hanging. Like, I had the exact same reaction, because for me, one of the biggest complaints with Overwatch was, you know, I go to BlizzCon and I listen to Chris Metzen talk about how awesome these characters are, and I'm just like, dude, none of this is represented in the game, like, at all. And then I get this short, and I'm like, yes, more of this, please. My one nitpick is that I believe the short just does more to prove my point that Reaper is one of the most boring characters in history. he's just dark and evil, and he has nothing really interesting to bring to the table.
Well, maybe we're going to have a short about his story and see where he's coming from.
I hope so, because that makes me sad, because Reaper is my favorite character to play. So
I wonder if we're going to get one per character, or, you know, one with one good guy and one bad girl. That sounds wrong.
Or bad guy.
Bad guy.
Bad person.
Bad person. One good person. Yes.
That disgusting politically correct person right now. That's what I'm going to do.
I really wish all of them are going to be represented, but not like we're going to throw one animated short with like 15 of them. And it's just like trying to make a movie about Street Fighter at this point, and it becomes ridiculous. I hope we get like 10 shorts with, I'm guessing it's going to be more like 4. But I would hope we get 10 with 2 characters featured per episode or so. And so they get enough time to get developed a little bit.
Yeah, just keep them coming. I really enjoy this. As someone who I know he's an ape, not a monkey, but as someone who traditionally does not particularly like monkeys or apes, I think they're gross and creepy. They made me love the baby Winston. You know, he was adorable.
He is adorable.
Get on, you guys.
Anyway, if you haven't seen that short yet, just go to, I think it's the Xbox channel. It's xbox.com/Overwatch. They have a deal with Blizzard, apparently. I don't think they're going to have anything exclusive, but certainly on the marketing side, they're marketing Overwatch more for the Xbox than they are for the PlayStation. So.
Oh, yeah. The same thing's happening with, I think it's The Division. Like, I watched those commercials, and there's no indication whatsoever that this game is available on anything other than an Xbox One.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh, what are you playing on, by the way?
Xbox One, because that's where my buddies picked it up. Even though I just got a brand new video card, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm sure The Division looks beautiful, but multiple friends were like, yeah, I got it from my Xbox. I'm like, I guess that's where I'm getting it.
Whispers of the Old Gods is the next Hearthstone expansion. It's themed on, well, you wouldn't have guessed, the old gods from Azeroth that were imprisoned beneath the earth. And it will be released in late April, early May. So it's still at least 4 to 6 weeks away. That was a little bit of a letdown because for the last piece of content, it was League of Explorers.
It was a bit of a letdown. Let's be honest.
Yeah. So yeah, you do a show about Hearthstone. What is the deal with that expansion?
It's hard to say, right? Because they haven't shown us all that much.
Well, now we must have what, 30 cards at this point?
No, not quite. And that's still not enough. If you're going to have a set with over 100 cards, it's really hard to judge how excited to be or not to be for the expansion when they're doing this kind of drip feed. Granted, it makes my job as somebody who has to produce a show about this stuff a lot easier, because it's like, cool, we only have 5 cards, we can talk about each and every one per week, let's go. But as in terms of getting hyped for the expansion, it's hard. You don't know. You have to look at each card in a vacuum, and that doesn't tell you a whole lot.
Well, they did show a little bit of one of the card synergies that is going to be happening with K'Thun, which is one of the old gods. And there are a bunch of cards that affect K'Thun. Basically, if you get one of those cards, it might give K'Thun more health and attack, and basically it grows in your deck. It grows and grows and grows until finally you can play it, and it is devastating.
Yes, it's a murderous Chia Pet.
Yeah, and the thing that is kind of fun for new and returning players is that once, if you buy the initial pack that is 45 euros, I think, you have a guaranteed K'Thun, which is a legendary. So it is kind of,
I don't think there's any purchase necessary. I believe if you log in during the launch event, you're guaranteed to get them.
Oh, all right. Well, I didn't realize. Okay,
I
that's even better.
That's the case. Okay, I know you get a free pack or two, and I'm pretty sure you're guaranteed to get K'Thun.
And the thing is, you get that card that has synergies with a lot of the cards you're going to get from the packs. So it sort of helps you build that. We don't know how good it's going to be, but it gets you back into the mood and allows you to do something with that new expansion that is productive from the beginning. So everyone will have something to look forward to when they open those packs. I think that's really smart of the way they're handling it, because it, especially for returning players who might think the game has become too complex, it's going to give them a clear path to a deck they can build and have fun with this new expansion.
Absolutely. I'm obviously excited for it, but I just want to see more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's the other thing, which is really cool for returning players, is the recipes, the deck recipes, which are basically established decks that they tell you, this is a cool deck for your class. They offer a couple of different decks and they give you the deck basically as if you would go over the internet and look for a cool deck. They just give it to you in game, tell you which cards are included in the deck. And if there is a few that you don't have, they suggest replacements for those cards. So that is a super cool feature as well for returning players. If you've ever tried Hearthstone and you didn't get into it or stopped playing a year ago, I think that's a great way to get back in.
I really like deck recipes. I think they did a stellar job with it.
I really hope they update the decks, you know, in
me the, too. Yeah. Me too. I was thinking the same thing. You have to, right? Because as new cards come out, things are gonna fall off and not be available in standard, and we're gonna get new archetypes that we never thought existed before. I mean, they have some archetypes in there that I would argue don't exist now, like Beast Druid. But it's cool. It's so cool to see them continually updating the game to make it a better experience for brand new players. And yeah. I think Deck Recipes absolutely delivers on that.
And yeah, hopefully every 6 months or so they will update them. I really hope so.
That would be dope.
Quick news, they keep updating. They updated Diablo 2 and Warcraft 3. I mean, Warcraft 3 is getting a new update as well. Basically, they're still updating games that are 15 years old and making them able to run on the current systems. That is super cool. I mean, I personally don't want to go back and play Diablo 2 anymore because it
I don't need it.
Look great, but
it looks pretty bad.
But it's really cool that, you know, they're supporting the game 15 years after it's been launched. Think of where you were 15 years ago, possibly playing Diablo 2. But
we had the demo on all of our computers in our computer lab.
Really? I see you were spending lots of time studying, sir.
We also, yeah, speaking of emulators, we also had emulators on every single one of them, and we had it networked so that we could play against each other on the Super Nintendo Dragon Ball Z fighting games that were only in Japanese that we all had installed on each computer.
Oh, that game was so cool.
Yeah, it was fun as hell.
It was awesome. But, oh, right, so emulators. So that was, right, it must have come out in 94, 96, 95, something like that.
Probably, and this would have been...
no, not even. That was...
Well, it was a Super Nintendo game, yeah. So that sounds about right. Hmm. And I mean, this we're talking 2001, 2002, when I was starting high school when we had this, and it was the old IMAX with the like colored shells that look like TVs. That's what we had.
Nice. All right. Well, you know what? You can reminisce by playing Diablo 2 now on your brand new machine.
I'm good. I'd rather play Warcraft 3 again.
Yeah, Warcraft 3 looks a little bit better for sure.
It holds up pretty well, man. It's a good, and for me, it has a huge nostalgia factor. That is where my love affair with Blizzard began, was Warcraft 3.
Yeah, understandable. Well, that's it for the big news items. Before we move on to The Division and a bunch of other smaller news, I want to thank Zombie Joe 3, not Zombie Joe 2, but Zombie Joe 3, who left a comment and a review on the iTunes store in the US. He says, really wish I started listening sooner. And for that, you have all my love, Zombie Joe. This has been one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. Patrick does a great job bringing interesting stories to the table and discusses them in a thoughtful and smart way. I really look forward to each new episode. Thank you so much. That makes me feel so warm and happy. That's the best compliment anyone can give about the show, right?
That makes me feel impressed that a zombie can speak so well.
Well, you know, maybe the show isn't that good, and it's just that the zombie, it's good for a zombie. So yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, now you're dampening my enthusiasm. No, I'm kidding. Thank you so much, Zombie Joe. If you think the show is cool and you want to let other people know about it, then go to iTunes or your podcast catalog of choice and rate it. Give us a large number of stars if you like it, and leave us a review because it helps other people discover the show because it gets us higher in the rankings and all of that good stuff. The Division, finally. So the division is selling like hotcakes, and it is making tons of money, and it is getting awesome reviews, and everyone is loving it. Basically, it made $330 million in its opening week, which is the best ever for a new franchise, more than the previous record holder, which was Destiny. And
snap.
Yeah,
drop that gauntlet.
And they also had a sales record in the first 24 hours, also for a new franchise. Basically, they did apparently better than Watch Dogs, which was, for a new franchise, the highest selling game in history. So
that kind of makes me sad.
Yeah, the thing is, when you talk about Watch Dogs, you're like, oh, and then, you know, things fell apart and the game isn't remembered very fondly.
There were things about Watch Dogs that I enjoyed, but the game overall was pretty crappy. But it's funny because the thing I probably enjoyed the most was the cover system, and it's more or less here in the Division.
I hear there are a number, I didn't play Watch Dogs, but I hear there are a number of elements that you can see the affiliation between the two. But I mean, this isn't Watch Dogs, and it's definitely getting raving reviews. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that overall the game wasn't good and that they didn't like it. Everyone loves it, right? So tell us what you think and what's your experience.
Well, I mean, when it was first shown at E3, what, like 3 years ago?
Something like that.
I thought it looked fantastic. I was very excited about it because I was very excited for Destiny as well. But I knew I was going to be into Destiny. It was like the sci-fi fantasy thing, and I'm always into that. But every now and then, I want something that's a little more grounded, but isn't Call of Duty, which is definitely not very grounded anymore. So I was really excited about The Division. And I was also a big Ubisoft fan. I mean, I've played damn near every single Assassin's Creed and loved them to hell and back. I even, you know, beat Watch Dogs. And so I was really stoked, but I mean, you know, the last few years, Ubisoft hasn't necessarily been living up to their
announcement to trailers.
Yes, or even releasing games that function completely, aka Unity. So I was getting less and less hyped for Watch Dogs, and you know, every year they had something new to show. I'm like, yeah, okay, it still looks cool. Can I just play the game already? So my hype was waning. So when it finally came out, actually, I didn't get it on launch day. I waited. More and more of my Xbox buddies were picking it up and like, dude, no, it's really good. You should get in here. So I was finally getting better from my illness, and I went out and picked it up on the Friday after it had released. And I'm so surprised by how much I like this game. I think part of that is my diminished expectations. But I like it so damn much. Destiny also probably had a role to play in me kind of guarding myself, because I was so excited for Destiny. When I picked it up, I was incredibly disappointed.
So, all right, what do you like? How is it? How good is it? How is it good? Everyone has heard about it, but...
I like third-person shooters. There's not enough of them out there, I feel like. I was a huge fan of Gears of War on the 360, even though I don't like the aesthetic. I'm not a huge fan of the art direction. I think it's like a fever dream mixed with roid rage. But I love the way it plays. I liked the cover system. I loved hacking people up with chainsaws, and I had a good time with that. And nothing's really scratched that itch since 3 came out for me, because I avoided the one that came out after that because it looked pretty crappy. So the Division's really it's scratching that third person shooter, that really solid cover system itch for me. I love the cover system. It is so good. And I'm surprised how mobile my character is. I don't know. I love getting up on
the system where you select the place you want to go to cover and just press a button and you.
Yeah, and he just runs like hell. He just does whatever he needs to do to get to that cover, and bullets are whizzing past your head. And I love that. And also on I've been really impressed by the level design. There's always a place where there's a good angle that you kind of accidentally discover. It's like, oh crap, I can jump up on this this truck, and then I can get up into this scaffolding on the side of New York City. And and that's the other thing too, if you've ever been to New York City, it's a very surreal experience because they did such a damn good job recreating it. So I just don't know. I'm enjoying everything about it. I think they made some really smart decisions. I think they succeed in a lot of ways where Destiny failed. And I'm a sucker for a good co-op experience, and I've been enjoying playing this with my friends a lot. And a good buddy of mine, Ben, who I used to podcast with, he doesn't really podcast anymore, but we've been friends for a long time. I probably play with him more than anything. And one night we were playing, and he stops and he goes, "Dude, this sounds like the freaking Ubisoft press demo." Like the way we're talking to each other, because we're like, okay, I'm gonna flank from the left, all right, cover me, I need suppressing fire, and we stop, we're like, this is the cheesiest crap, but I'm loving it. So
you know, you're not the first person I hear saying that. A bunch of people have been saying it's incredible that Ubisoft press video, that you, when you watch it, you're like, there, this sounds so fake, it's ridiculous, why would they do that? And then actually in the end, that's how you sound like when you play the game.
Yeah, especially when one of the bosses comes out, it becomes serious mode. It's like, oh God, all right, I'm switching to my light machine gun. All right, suppressing fire, grenade out. It's ridiculous. I love it to pieces.
What level are you?
I hit 25 last night.
All right. So I'm only level 5, so I really have tried the very beginning, right?
Okay.
But I need your help, Garrett.
All right.
I am not liking this game. And I don't understand why I'm the only person in the world who is not having a good time. You know?
I don't know.
Let me tell you what I'm not liking about it. I feel like... So, first of all, it's very frustrating in the sense that I'm fully ready to accept the ridicule that is going to come with this statement. I've died so much, I think the game is too hard in the beginning. And not too hard, but I'm not understanding something.
Really?
And whenever I come across, you know, one of those last boss encounters with a bunch of people where they're like, attention, more bad guys are coming, be careful. And I'm like, I often run out of bullets trying to kill everyone, and I get shot. I have to restart the thing maybe 5 times or 6 times to finally get the boss. I don't understand how the mechanics work so that you can actually, you know, I try to run to another part of the map and get in another cover situation and get a flank on the enemies, but it just never works. I always get shot in the face, and the you know, some of the little enemies show up, run close to you yelling, and you're trying to shoot them, but then it becomes super awkward. The controls aren't made for close quarter, so you try to shoot them and it doesn't really work well. And then
it's actually, you can fire from the hip, which is great when someone kind of surprises you. If you just pull the trigger without aiming down sight, you'll just fire kind of blindly from the hip. So if you have a shotgun and someone rushes you, that's not a bad way to handle it. Although I honestly aim all the time, even when they're close to me, and I don't really have too much of an issue with that. Yeah, I'm honestly really surprised to hear that. I'm not trying to come down on you, but I don't think I died until I hit like level 12 when snipers started showing up.
Wow.
Snipers suck in this game. they're scary. So I think the first thing I would say is, in the beginning, you're right, I did have issues with those guys that rush you.
It's not even those guys that I have issue with. I managed to deal with them. It's just awkward in the movement part. It's just like the bosses, yeah. And like overall, I get shot all the time. I'm in cover. I go up a little bit, and then they shoot me over the cover, and I just, you know, it, and most of all, the gunplay doesn't feel satisfying, and I think it's kind of, this game feels to me like the anti-Destiny, you know? It does everything that Destiny didn't do well, it does it great. But everything that Destiny did do well, it does it poorly. Basically, the gunplay in Destiny is stellar, super satisfying, and everything else sucked, right?
I would expect nothing less from the people who made Halo.
Sure. But in the Destiny, the game gunplay sucks.
Or you mean the Division?
In the Division.
I don't think it sucks. It's definitely not as good when you first start out because you have pretty shitty guns. your starter assault rifle has a pretty miserable accuracy, so it's not going to cluster well, and it feels a little bullet hosy. I definitely noticed that when I started. I would defend it a little bit by saying, traditionally, I have always felt third person shooters, the shooting just never feels as satisfying as a first person, for the most part. But that's neither here nor there. I don't know. I've been really enjoying the gunplay. Once I, leveled up just a hair and found, started getting slightly better weapons.
So when does the real game, I don't know if I'm in the real game now or if I'm still in the introduction-y type of experience.
If you're in Brooklyn, you're still in the introductory experience. If you've moved to the main Manhattan map where you can pretty much go anywhere and get your ass kicked if you're not careful, then you're in the main game.
Basically, I'm still building up the base. I haven't...
So you have the base that you can start building?
Yes.
You're in the main game.
Okay. And that is how it feels from now to 25.
Pretty much, yeah. It doesn't, yeah. I don't know what you're doing.
I don't know what your problem is.
It sounds like, without watching your gameplay, it sounds like you're moving up too soon and too eagerly, because
maybe
if you're playing by yourself, that is absolutely the way to get your ass kicked.
I tried to stay hidden, but then they throw grenades and I have to run somewhere else, and Maybe I'm going to make use of that Twitch website and see how the pros do it.
Yeah, I mean, I always have a side. I always, when I'm in a piece of cover, I'm always paying attention to my right or left, because I know that, eventually a grenade's going to come. I don't want to move up because that's dangerous. So I move sideways. So I stay at roughly the same distance that I currently am, but I get away from the frigging grenade.
Okay.
And that red circle that the grenade makes is incredibly literal. You can be a pixel outside of it and you're fine.
Yeah.
The big thing in this game, I feel like, is don't panic. Like, if grenade comes in, don't just run away and without a plan. Cause you'll just get just picked off.
That is what happens sometimes. And I haven't played with anyone yet. I'm only playing solo, which.
Gotcha. Yeah. Which I've done the majority of my play solo.
But okay, it is possible. It's not like I'm playing
absolutely.
It now.
I would recommend for you. Have you tried the turret? Have you even unlocked it yet?
I haven't unlocked it.
Okay.
I've only gotten the medical wing up and running.
So. Gotcha. Well, go do missions with lightning bolts and unlock the turret, because there's a debuff in this game called Suppressed, and it's if you're firing at someone but you haven't killed them enough, you have a chance to apply the suppression debuff, and they will just hide indefinitely while they're being targeted, and your turret will let you do that, so it's almost like having a second player with you.
All right. Okay.
So that definitely helps, but you can do it without it. I think you should probably just stay further back than you think.
I can't kill anyone. I have to empty two magazines to kill one person.
Get a marksman rifle and an assault rifle.
I have the police M4, I think, the one you get. Okay,
that's what I had. I used that gun until level 12. It was fine. Yeah, I don't know, man.
I'm gonna keep playing. I'm gonna keep trying. And we'll see, because this is definitely not definitive impressions on the game. And there have been many games I didn't like at first and ended up loving. But for some reason I feel very estranged from the rest of the gaming community because everyone loves it, and I'm like, I don't understand. Why am I so bad, and why am I not enjoying? It's not just that I'm dying. It's that I'm genuinely not enjoying the minute-to-minute action of playing the game. So, but, I don't know. We'll see. I'll keep playing. I'll definitely not give up now. I'll give it more time.
Well, it's fine. It's okay not to like something.
Of course. But it's just, it feels like it feels strange. It feels like there's something I'm not getting. Like there are games that I don't enjoy, but I understand their appeal, right? Yeah. I think Bloodborne and the Dark Souls type games is the most clear example of that. I got into Bloodborne, play for 10 hours. It wasn't for me, but I understand what people find in it, right?
I'm right there with you on that, by the way. I hate those games. I hate them so much.
But see, yeah, it's not that I dislike The Division. It's just I don't understand what element of gameplay makes it so successful, and I want to understand. So I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah, for me, it just comes down to that type of cover-based combat, and it's something I really enjoy. I don't know if it's because I used to play paintball. Like, I don't know, but I love it.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention the loot fiesta that the game appears to be, which is a motivating factor for many players. So,
the loot? Yeah. Well, I that's just kind of a given, so I didn't feel like bringing it up. Like, it has that Diablo hook. It's like, just one more mission, just one more weapons cache. I just want to see what I get.
Yeah. Well, all right. I'll keep trying and hoping for better gear that will allow me to out-level the missions I'm doing and finally not die.
Make friends. It's definitely way better with other people.
But I don't like interacting with people in a social manner. I just... Well, yeah.
Then you need to not suck, Patrick.
All right. That is the only solution. The only solution is for me to not suck. All right. So the not the anti-Destiny, the anti-Division... which is the Destiny, is going to have a spring update on April 12th. So if you're playing Destiny still, or if you're waiting for something to get back in, that might be the time. It's going to have one additional strike and light level increase and a bunch of other stuff. We don't have a lot of details yet. It seems to me, from what we've heard so far, that it's a little bit lackluster of an update. It's also going to be free for everyone who owns the Taken King, so it shouldn't be surprising that it's going to be less than the for-pay updates we had last year. But yeah, so we'll see. We'll have more details in the coming weeks. Paragon is available. You know, Paragon is that 3D MOBA by Epic, Epic Games, and I bought into the early access. I figured, I want to give it a try. I'm really enjoying Heroes of the Storm, and that's a MOBA. And I like Overwatch, and that's a 3D game, an FPS. So sort of FPS / TPS MOBA, that could be fun. Have you, you're not into the game, are you?
No, I've barely even looked at it. All I can say is it's really pretty.
Yeah, it's super pretty. Definitely super pretty.
It's gorgeous, and it looks like an Epic game. Everything's over-engineered, and but yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's on the way it looks. It's sort of I sort of have a problem with games that take themselves too seriously a little bit. It's kind of like, I don't know why, but I need a little bit of self-awareness in my games.
There's why you're not liking The Division, man. There's a game that takes itself way too serious.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, even The Division, I think it's sort of a storytelling kind of setup that makes sense in that context. Whereas Paragon, you have all of these characters that are like, we're badasses and we're super cool and we are like awesome. And you're like... Yeah, okay. It's kind of almost like Call of Duty in a sense, in that there is no self-awareness. It's all serious all the time, and we try to. It's almost like the game is made for 14-year-olds, and I guess in a sense maybe it is. I don't know. Although I'm sure they're not the biggest people who are going to pay the most for a free-to-play game. So I'm not sure that's the case. But it's like the super, I don't want to just be describing Blizzard all the time, because they have a lot of self-reference and a lot of humor in the games, and them.
It's hard not to bring them up right now, what with the Overwatch short just coming out and having a really great sense of humor and also a great sense of like wonder to it.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's different aesthetics and different takes. I mean, this is clearly the route that they want to go. And I'm with you. It is not what I appreciate. But I don't know. I mean, also, correct me wrong. I know very little about the game, but I'm assuming it is just a PvP game, right? There's no campaign mode or anything like that.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm of the belief that your story doesn't matter in PvP only games.
Yeah, it's not just about the story, though. It's not just the story. It's just the character design feels like over the top, and it's almost like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like it's this super lowbrow, you know, like a summer blockbusters with so many explosions and the super buff dude and the super sexy girl, and you're like, okay, I get what you're trying to do, but like,
these people don't exist in real life.
It's not even about not existing in real life. I don't know. Anyway, so I guess
you're also describing every game Epic has ever made.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
Gears of War was the same way. Although, yeah. I guess Bulletstorm, while it had that look, it clearly was trying to be funny, and I feel like it succeeded.
Right. I don't even remember if I played Bulletstorm, but...
I didn't either, but... But I appreciated what they were going for, which is humor through ridiculous violence.
Right, right.
Which is something that I do like. And it's something that's what I liked about Gears of War is like, I think the game took itself too seriously. I don't think it meant to be funny, but I found the ridiculous amounts of gore to be hysterical.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Gears of War was over the top, and it was definitely, man bros high-fiving each other in, you know, they looked like elephants. They were so large and
yeah, bulky, I really think it could have used more humor, though. Like, you have the voice of Bender voicing your main character.
Oh, I don't rewatch Futurama, but the thing is, it was so over the top with the bloodbath, like literal bloodbaths. It was spraying everywhere that it was kind of funny. And there are some games that don't have that. I mean, anyway, coming back to Paragon, it feels like each character is badass, and in their own right, they're kind of cool. But when you only have that in the entire game, and everyone trying to one-up each other, being more badass, and it's like, no, I'm cooler. Like, it's kind of the subtext of the game.
So I think what you're saying is it's homogenized. Like... Mm. No, I mean, it doesn't. Yeah. There's not enough to set each other apart. Other than this person uses a bow and arrow, this person uses a gun, this guy's a hulking character.
They have different designs for sure. They look very different. They're different styles of badass, but it's all. Anyway, all right. Let's not spend too much time on the design, which is clearly it doesn't work for me. But the game itself, it is extremely MOBA-y. It feels like, from what I know, which is admittedly not a lot, it feels like they've taken the MOBA formula and made it into a 3D thing. And I'm sure there are changes, for sure. You know, obviously, when you go 3D, it's going to be different. But it feels like it is much closer to a traditional MOBA than to, easier MOBA or a shooter MOBA or an FPS, competitive FPS type thing. It is very close to the MOBA aesthetic, and not aesthetic, but system. And so I played a couple of games with all bots, and we were destroying the opposing team. Like, it was announcing an enemy kill every 10 seconds. And, and it still took like 25 minutes to finish the game. It felt so slow and so, it was so laborious. It was, I'm going to try it again. I mean, I paid good money for it. I'm definitely going to try it again. But that was not great for me, not a MOBA fan. It didn't feel like it was the game that I would enjoy. Again, some other games I've tried and didn't like at first and ended up loving, like Heroes. Although Heroes, I was kind of into it a little bit, but didn't quite get it. It wasn't as negative an experience initially. It was just, I wanted very small doses before I really got into it. This one, I'm like, why is this happening that way? Why is it not? You know how, sorry, again, coming back to Blizzard and Valve and Rockstar and all of those companies that take the essence of a game and make everything around it fun. Paragon feels like they've kept a lot of the tedium of the style of game they're trying to emulate. And it is still early beta, whatever. It's still in development. Absolutely. So all of this might change, but it's the impression it gave me when I tried it. So,
well,
Yeah.
No, sounds like you're having a rough time with games, Patrick.
Well, I'm still playing Overwatch. I'm loving that. So there's that. Daybreak Game Company is having a hard time with EverQuest Next. It's been canceled.
I don't think they're having a hard time with it anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. It's kind of sad. I mean, EverQuest is the first MMO for many of us. Have you ever played EverQuest? Or?
Oh, God, no, no. Guild Wars was my first MMO, and I very quickly traded it in for World of Warcraft.
Okay, yeah. My first MMO was before EverQuest, but it was my first serious MMO. EverQuest Next has been canceled. What to say about it? I'm not entirely surprised. I'm sad because it's definitely a team that deserves better. But EverQuest Next felt like a game that was the feverish dream of a developer that was throwing in everything he wished he could have in a fantasy world into a box and saying, this is going to be my game, without any consideration of actual gameplay that should work.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up my thoughts on it too. It was really, again, it was really pretty, and as someone who really enjoys MMOs, I'm sad to see it go, even though I'm not invested in EverQuest in the least. But yeah, I don't know, man. It sounds like it was for the best. I mean, it sounds like they're kind of pulling the Blizzard. Like, it's like, well, we couldn't really find the fun, so we're canceling it. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. I would love to. I want a good, you know, new shiny MMO that's not
World of Warcraft.
Yeah, that's not World of Warcraft.
You know, I don't know if we want something like this. I mean, it's been discussed quite a bit, especially with the cancellation of EverQuest Next, which, if you don't know, it was basically trying to be to include AI elements that would spawn certain monsters that would have sort of an ecosystem, wildlife of monsters that would develop, and you would influence that fauna and by going and killing some of the mobs, and it would generate other characters somewhere else, and it was like more of a living, breathing world than any game you've ever seen. So yeah, it's been canceled. Wildstar is apparently not doing great. They're laying off people. Carbine Studio is laying off people. So there's been a lot of discussions about, is the time of the MMO passed? And I think it might be, because the MMO elements have passed on to lots of other games. We've been talking about the Division. It has lots of multiplayer, not quite MMOs, but there's influences there.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Division and Destiny to me feel a lot more Diablo-like.
Agreed.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. And no, I agree with you. I think that's a bit of the direction everything is heading. But I don't think MMOs are dead. I just think, I don't know. I think whoever makes the next great MMO, they're going to have to figure out how to change it up. That was my problem with Wildstar, right? I got into Wildstar and I was instantly bored.
Really?
I loved it so much. I loved the aesthetic. I loved the world. I loved just the characterization in that game. But the second I started playing, I'm like, this is freaking WoW. I'm just traveling from point A to point B, killing X amount of things, collecting crap and turning it in. And I don't think you can do that anymore and have a successful game.
So, well, the MMO idea is always associated with playing lots and spending a lot of time in the game. Would you like to invest yourself so much into a game now, or would you like an MMO that doesn't demand so much of you?
Well, I already have that because WoW has been changed so much that it doesn't demand all that much of me anymore.
True.
But no, I mean, I just want a good game is what I'm saying. Like, I want a new experience. I don't want the same old talk to the guy with the exclamation point, go get the stuff, bring it back to him. Now he gives you some XP. You're good. And I don't know what that is. I'm definitely not helping the problem.
But what would make it, you know, what would put that category of games into an MMO? Is it like having lots of different people on one dedicated server that is your world and that you can, that is persistent? Is that what would make it an MMO?
Like for me, like, I think Destiny came probably the closest, but they definitely failed. Like, if you could give me an experience like Destiny, But actually deliver with enough content and a world that didn't feel as small and as limited as Destiny's world did and still does after a major expansion. Like that, I think that would have had its hooks in me. Like I expected Destiny to be like my next WoW, and it is so not because they don't update it enough. And that world feels tiny. Earth feels like just that rusted Russia section. Like,
that's what about dumb. What about why, the division why would though?
You do that.
What about the division though? Is it not that that's, kind I of
think,
experience?
That I think is why is a big reason why I'm enjoying the division so much, because the world is huge, even though it is just New York. But there is a great deal of variety within it. You have these little parks. You can move in and out of apartment buildings with no load times, and the attention to detail in those apartment buildings is incredible. It feels like a large living, breathing world for the most part, even though, you know, once again, everything kind of just wants to kill you outside of the safe zones. But I think that's why I'm enjoying the division so much, is just because of how large the world feels, which is hilarious because it is just New York City. Whereas Destiny is our solar system, yet the division feels larger than Destiny.
Yeah, that is interesting indeed. All right, okay. I feel like there is more discussion to be had about where MMOs go next. I don't think we're going to see one. Maybe there's going to be something that's going to happen and that's going to make it popular again. But I think that World of Warcraft is the one that is the only one left. And I'm definitely looking forward to Legion, but I'm going to be playing it for 2, 3, 4 months. I don't think they're going to get their hooks back in me for constant playing, which is what I associate with MMOs. So
yeah, I agree. I'm very excited for Legion as well. As a WoW fan, as a fan of that world and that lore, like Legion is everything, is all of my favorite crap about WoW, because I love elves and it's just all elves all the time, plus the Burning Legion, like bring it on. But yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't see myself ever reaching Wrath of the Lich King levels of involvement again in World of
Warcraft. So you're not going to be playing, you know, 4 hours a day every day for like a year?
No, but I can't. I have to play Hearthstone. I have to play Heroes, man. Like, Blizzard has ruined it for me.
Well, as long as it stays in the family.
Yeah, exactly. They've ruined it for me in the best way possible by giving me other experiences that I also love.
All right, Riot Games, you might know them because they are the developer of a little game called League of Legends.
I haven't heard of this game. Please tell me more.
Well, go look it up. You might find it in some corners of the internet. They have bought Radiant Entertainment, and I'm sure you haven't heard about Radiant Entertainment, but they are made up of members of the Street Fighter community, and they had been developing Rising Thunder, a free-to-play fighting game, which had been doing pretty well. The goal of the game was to do a super easy to get into fighting game with no complex motions to make difficult moves, but focus rather on the strategy of of the game of playing rather than the execution. And it's really interesting to me because they had another game as well called Stone Hearth. It's really interesting to me because they are basically potentially buying a fighting game, and knowing their expertise in esports, it's super exciting that we might get another entrant in the market of successful esports fighting games. Street Fighter V has had the issues we know. It's still going okay, but I would love for that space to be revitalized a little bit, and that's a potential prospect of Riot buying Rising Thunder, basically.
Yeah, I love the style of this game, by the way.
Yeah,
been talking
a lot
robots.
About robots.
Yeah, they're just, I love the art style so much. It's so fun.
Yeah, it is very how to define it? I don't even know. It's like, yeah, fun with robots, and they're almost Pixar-y as well.
Yeah, it has a bit of that Pixar. Like, I see a little bit of the Iron Giant in a lot of these guys.
Yeah, for sure. Iron Giant, absolutely. Big Hero 6 even.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it has a very animated appeal, which I dig. That being said, never been one for fighters for the most part, really.
Yeah. Well, until Blizzard does one.
I'm not even sure even Blizzard could make me a fighting game fan.
I'm sure they could. Because Nintendo I would force with, you to play
with Smash Brothers, but that's not really a fighter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't want to insult any Smash Brothers fans there, but, you know, anyway. Let's not keep going down that slope. talking about Nintendo, their first mobile game is out in Japan. And, well, game should be used with quotes. It's Miitomo, their chat app thing. You build a Mi and then you tell it stuff about yourself, and then it goes out into the world and comes back and tells you what it's heard from other people through their Mis. And there are a few little gameplay things here and there. First game, first app, Nintendo app on iOS, and is it on Android? I'm not even sure. It's not the most incredible thing ever, but it's important because it's Nintendo, right?
Yeah.
It's being downloaded a lot, though.
It's really hard for me to feign interest in this.
Seems boring.
Super low on my radar.
I'm still going to download it when it comes out in the West. I'll set up my Mi and everything, but I doubt I'm going to spend a lot of time on it. I'll wait for the next app, which is hopefully going to be a proper game.
Yeah, yes. Not for me.
And that is it for our episode of Pixels. Thank you so much, Garrett, for being on.
Patrick, you know I love coming on and talking games and telling you stink in the division.
Well, we'll see how things evolve from now with that amazing game, I guess.
Play safer than you think you need to.
All right, I'll try, and I hopefully will get some sound advice from my good friend and expert and division expert Garrett to guide me through those hazardous waters of the division. I almost said the destiny.
The destiny.
So, where are you at with stuff and things on the internet? Where can people find you?
Oh, I'm at so many places with so many things. You can find me on Twitter at Garrett Art. There's two R's and two T's in Garrett, one R and one T in Art, just in case you weren't aware. and all of the podcasts that I do can be found at amove.tv. Check out Angry Chicken for Hearthstone. Check out Into the Nexus for Heroes of the Storm. Check out The Angry Nerd, where I recently spent a lot of time talking about The Division. And of course, there's this show with these two jackasses called Overwatchers, which you should check out if you dig Overwatch.
And you should dig Overwatch. I mean, it is an awesome game, and we talk about it all the time. Are we going to do an episode next week?
Probably. I mean, if nothing else, we have The Short to talk about.
Some other things might happen until then. So
yeah, we have a week, so we'll see.
True. So Overwatchers at amove.tv is where you'll find all of this. I'm Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. And you can find this show at frenchspin.com. And you will also find The Phileas Club, which is a show where I talk about stuff happening in the world with people from different countries. And it's actually a lot of fun. And it's super, I mean, if I dare say so myself, it's super interesting. The last episode, actually, I did with Wendy Dunford, who's Scott Johnson's sister. Maybe you've heard her on The Morning Stream, which is a podcast that he does. And we talked about high school cliques in the U.S. and tried to understand and explain what they are and why they exist and how different they are from the pop culture references that we have. I have as a European, the only way I'm exposed to those weird social constructs is through movies and TV shows. So we discussed that. Yeah. It was super fun.
I was in the artist / garage band clique.
Oh, that sounds like a pretty cool clique. Not, you know, on the bottom of the geek barrel like maybe some other people were.
It worked out pretty well for me, especially after many, many years of private Catholic school where I was horrendously unpopular.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you know, we also talk about how people end up when they're in the popular crowd and what happens to them in afterwards, you know, in real life when they grow up, and why maybe that it happens in this way and that way, and what explains it. Go listen to the show. It's super fun.
Man, now I want to talk about that because I find it so fascinating because my high school was so big. That, I mean, there kind of were cliques, but like I had, you know, I was a nerd, but I had a bunch of friends from the football team because a bunch of them were drummers in bands that I played in. And like, there was all this intermingling between cliques.
There's definitely some of that. I mean, that's what Wendy was mentioning as well. It's not like it's as strict as you might see it in the movies. Obviously, Hollywood exaggerates everything. But we also had a comment on the blog, I think from Casey, who was saying it actually, at least for her, in her experience, she had she was in two different high schools, one of them super large with like 2,500 students and another one super small with less than 400. And the cliques were a lot more visible in the smaller one. It was a lot more defined. So
that
might also have to do with it.
Yeah, because like when I was in a grade school, the private school I was in, like, you know, the really small class, and it was super harsh. They were harsh divides. And then I got to a high school, a public high school with 2,400 students, and the lines were very blurry.
Yeah, so that seems to corroborate that sentiment that Casey mentioned. So anyway, go listen to the show. I mean, there's lots of super interesting stuff in there as well. It's the Phidias Club. It's at frenchspin.com, where this show is also available. For next episode, I'm actually going to be in Japan by the time the next recording is supposed to happen. I'm not sure how it's going to work because time zones are going to get all crazy. I'll figure it out eventually, but maybe for the first episode when I'm in Japan, I'll be there for a couple of months, a little bit longer than that even. But for the beginning, I don't know. I'll see how I manage things, but certainly we'll find ways to do the show while I'm there because I'm going to be there for a long time. So if I don't do the show, it's not going to work out for me. I really want to talk about video games with my friends in English. We'll see what happens. But follow me on Twitter if you want to see what happens in Japan when I'm there or what happens around me when I'm in Japan. We'll be back hopefully in 2 weeks, maybe a little bit later. Thanks so much, Garrett, for being with me. Thanks to you, dear listener, for listening. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.